Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by me. Yes, we are solo podcasting today, and I have a cornucopia of topics for us to play with. Before we dive in, I am reminding you to, inviting you to, thanking you for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, sharing, commenting, for sending this episode to at least three friends, because sharing is caring and caring is awesome. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com so that you can stay abreast of all of my latest offerings, be they book drops, live events, courses, webinars, special discounts, all of the fun things. Last request is for reviews. We're going to umbrella this topic, reviews. If you've read any of my books and you love them, thank you for heading on over to Amazon and leaving me a glowing, glorious review. And as you are listening to this podcast on an audio platform, thank you for navigating on over to the review section there and leaving this podcast 5 stars or however many stars you feel it deserves. All of these things are super helpful in allowing this offering to get more reach, allowing my book offerings to get more reach, et cetera, et cetera. One last piece before we dive in is if you have not yet checked out Wildcraft Herbs' various offerings, then I'm going to encourage you to run, don't walk, to their website, which is linked in the show notes below, because they have the most beautiful things. Just this morning, I was using their Rose Body Bar. They have this armpit butter that I love, which is way more fun than buying a big plastic deodorant applicator thing. They make bath salts, they make dish soap, they make beautiful teas and consciousness shifting support tools that I'm reticent to name on this podcast because people can sometimes get their panties in a bunch about a few of nature's tools that maybe pose a threat to big pharma. I don't know. Anyway, Wildcraft Herbs is not even a sponsor of the show. However, they are one of my personal favorites. And so I'm taking the opportunity of having this platform to clue you guys into some of the lifestyle upgrades that I am employing. And Wildcraft Herbs is definitely one of these lifestyle upgrades. So run, don't walk to their website, buy everything there for yourself and all of your loved ones. And I think that does it for housekeeping. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy me ramble on about God knows what. So I was meant to record this podcast yesterday and I woke up with my throat on fire and like being stabbed by thousands of glass shards, which will be its own theme, and a runny nose, and everything hurt, even like my skin hurt. So I took the day off, which was delightful and a reminder of like how great it is to have a day of doing absolutely nothing for the mental health, for the nervous system, and especially for bodily recovery. And so I was all set to get on my yoga mat today, and then I realized, oh wait, this is my small window in which I can actually record the podcast that I had intended to record yesterday. Hence, if you're watching with your eyes, yes, I am in my yoga gear and it's all fine. We're making it up as we go along. About that glass, I've been having some super consistent paranormal activity that I'm inspired to share with you, because I would love your take. So about 6 weeks ago, I found a giant piece of broken glass in my kitchen, and it was so big. It was like, well, I would have noticed this if I had broken anything recently and I would have cleaned it up, but I hadn't broken anything recently and I had no recollection as to what it was. Since then, I have found probably 5 or 6 additional giant chunks of broken glass just lying on my floor. Now, the great news is that because I live in a casita with brick floors, I am in the habit of always wearing some sort of slide or sandal or slipper or something on my feet just because this flooring tends to tear up my feet. It is a shoe-free house, so all of the slides that I use indoors never go outdoors. So the good news is I haven't stepped on, I was gonna say any of the pieces of glass, but there was one, but I just felt it so quickly that I didn't like, it didn't go inside. Like I clued in, oh, there's something pokey, and I removed it before there was any blood or need for medical intervention. But it occurs to me that none of this is happening, I would say organically, but who's to say paranormal activity isn't organic? It is organic, it's just maybe harder for the 3D mind to grasp. So last night, I found another giant piece of glass. Like they're so big that it makes no sense that they would be sitting on, like realistically, I haven't broken anything here for, let's say, 2 to 3 months. Okay. These pieces are so big that they wouldn't be lying around for 2 to 3 months without me noticing them. I don't have pets. I live alone. So I'm pretty clued into and aware of what is going on. So they're pretty much appearing out of nowhere, just these giant chunks of glass. So last night I found another one. And again, like they're just in these odd spots where it's not like, okay, next to the leg of a couch where I could see how I might have missed it when cleaning up something that I broke. No, they're just like in the middle of the floor. So 2 nights before, I'd noticed a very bright flash of light outside one of my windows. And I was hearing the types of noises outside the windows that would indicate some like very large animal was outside. And I do live in some degree of nature, but really all that I see are like cottontail bunny rabbits, jackrabbits, which are so weird because they're like, it looks like a rabbit mated with a deer or an antelope or something. They're just very different than bunnies. And then, of course, I have coyotes, but I mean, what I was hearing sounded more like a bear or like a mountain lion or something. So this morning, I go outside to water my jade. So I've been cultivating this jade plant for years, right? And there are like two stalks which have grown from like baby, baby, baby to pretty big. And a friend of mine was telling me how he had gotten his jade to flower by putting it outside, not in direct sunlight, but outside where it would get used to wind and more of the elements, and then being sure to bring it in like before first frost come fall or winter. So I upgraded the pot. I bought this like really beautiful pot and I got a big one because I'm like, let's be aspirational about how big my jade is going to grow. My jade has been outside for 1 week, maybe. And I go outside this morning to water it and it's gone. The pot is there. The copper coils that I'd placed in the pot were there and were un perturbed, but both stalks had been removed. There is some dirt outside and just totally disappeared. So I'm looking this up online, like what eats jade, and squirrels and rabbits are known to nibble on the leaves, but there's no way that they could like physically remove these well-rooted stalks from the plant and just disappear them. So I'm guessing it's a Bigfoot thing. I don't know. I think I just said big pafoot thing. So let's try that again. I'm guessing it's a Bigfoot thing. And I'm guessing here, if you guys get any hits as to what is going on, I welcome them. I don't think it's a person because why would a person just steal my jade plants and not like my Pilates reformer, which is outside and way more valuable? I'm pretty sure it's an animal. Just one of the many weird paranormal things that happen in my life, in my realm. The other one that happened a few years ago was I was breaking all of my electric toothbrush heads in my mouth. And it was getting to the point where I'm like, why am I continuing to even use an electric toothbrush? They would either explode in my mouth or they would explode on my counter, like just the head, just like the brush head. I think I broke like eight of them. And then I made this decision where it was like, okay, if I decide to buy more toothbrush heads, then I'm basically communicating to whatever paranormal being this is, I'm not interested. At the time, I was writing Plandemic 2, and I had a couple mystics say, yeah, it's some sort of like alien communication trying to come through. And I was like, yeah, I'm good. Like, I've got enough weirdness going on in my life. I don't need to open up that rabbit hole. So then I think it was the end of last year, I broke another toothbrush head in my mouth, and it'd been a couple years, but I'm living in that same like weird area, like back kind of north and behind Santa Fe, where it makes total sense that alien, weird, paranormal stuff would be happening out here. Anyway, so it happened again at the end of last year that I broke another toothbrush head in my mouth. And it's not like I'm doing something to break them. It's like, I don't know if it's an electrical current or something that it's getting from my mouth, but it's not, there's no like kinetic, logical reason that I'm seeing for these to be exploding. So the toothbrush had exploded, and I'm like, okay, here it comes again. And then I was in meditation within a day or two of it happening, and I saw this figure. It was like a head, like a face, but it was made of like doily lace, and it was white and intricate and very like DMT ayahuasca like, and it was pure white. But I've learned the hard way through my dalliances into the shamanic realms and the realms of psychedelia and all of that, which is to be discerning as to what I allow into my field. So I'm looking at this like white doily lace alien face, and I say out loud, I am only available for communion and communication with beings who are in service to the highest light and love. And then it disappeared. And then I ceased to break any more toothbrush heads. So I was like, okay, dodged a bullet there because like super smart to appear like all white and pure, but did not pass my test. So I am not like inviting in this type of communion, but I cannot see any other way around the pieces of glass just appearing out of nowhere in my house, and then whatever just happened to my jade tree. This concludes the paranormal segment of today's podcast, and I'm still transmuting the dissonance in my throat, so there might be a little more hydrating today. Okay, so picking up on the language of healing, not to beat it over the head, and I've had a couple experiences that are pointing to the value in the unpacking of this piece. So I had dinner with a girlfriend last week who's been dealing with various health challenges, I'd say, for the past year. So she checked her email on her phone while we were at dinner. And yes, I found it to be extremely rude and inappropriate. And no, she was not 19 years old. So there's no real rationale for this type of like egregiously rude behavior when hanging out with a friend. And choose your battles, no big deal. I didn't really feel the need to school her on how rude that was. I'm starting to let go of the urge to like micromanage the social space. And trust me, this has not come easy at all. But my attempts to stave off the total devolution of the social contract in light of cell phone addiction and cell phone abuse feels like a losing battle. So I'm starting to shut my mouth more than I used to, and we will also get into when to shut our mouth. Like this thing that's coming up around shutting my mouth, using my mouth, but we'll bookmark that. Let's stay on this one. So my friend checks her email at the table, and she's checking her test results of a blood test, and she says, "Okay, I got the test results. It's heavy metal poisoning." And I just watch her entire countenance like sink, right? She just sinks into this kind of darkness, and I feel the contraction and I feel the constriction. And I'm saying to her, that's fantastic. Like, now you know what it is. Like, now you get to heal. But what she was doing with it was allowing it to take her down. And I just thought of someone had posted something that was really appropriate to this, and I thought I took a screenshot, but apparently I didn't. No big deal. Okay, the point that I'm making here is that she received a diagnosis based on the symptoms that she had already been presenting for the previous year, And once the doctor had ascribed a pathology to those symptoms, I watched her go way, way down. And my attempts to kind of help reframe this as a win in terms of clarity and in terms of like, this marks the moment when you get to put an end to heavy metal poisoning or to the symptoms that doctors are attributing to heavy metal poisoning and start moving towards purification, detoxification, and optimal health, pretty much fell on deaf ears. Now, to a certain extent, I understand because we don't want to barrel over our authentic process, right? So there's something to receiving a diagnosis or a pathology that is validating, that might alert us to a sort of an intensity or to the benefits of a speedier shift in our behavior or to swift action in terms of restoring health, right? I noticed this when I fractured my wrist, even though I didn't notice how I never articulated that I had fractured my wrist until it was already healed, because the only story that I was willing to tell is that my wrist was strengthening and regenerating and healing at warp speed. And that was the only programming I was willing to put into my body. And it wasn't until after I would say it was healed, like I was actually able to play racquetball, that I fully acknowledged, like, wow, that was a bad injury. Like, I didn't realize, like, I thought I just pulled something or strained something, and it was worse than I thought. So we want to be realistic with, like, okay, this is what we're dealing with. And at the same time, what we don't want to do with the diagnoses is internalize all the fear and terror that comes along with them. And the paradigm shift that I'm inviting, and I am committing to growing my articulate communication vibes with every second of this podcast. I am becoming more and more articulate and clear as every second of this podcast moves forward. It's still happening. It's still in process. Come on, brain, kick in. Brain, mouth, I am instructing you to collaborate, to work together in harmony, to deliver an articulate and thought-provoking and powerful podcast. It is done, and so it is. So, the shift that I am speaking to is, instead of allowing a diagnosis to take us down and go down some rabbit hole of fear and worst case scenarios, and isn't this terrible? It's recognizing that the second we receive a diagnosis or a pathology, that is the end to the sickness. And that marks the beginning of our healing journey, where we get to leave the symptoms that are associated with the pathology or the diagnosis behind us. And now we are resourced to take positive action towards restoring balance and harmony and perfect health towards our bodies. And this is an attitude adjustment that I am inviting you and me and all of us to internalize and start to activate, which is recognizing, when we find out what's going on, it's not a reason to be sad or scared or stressed out. It's a reason to celebrate, because now we have the clarity necessary to know what are the corrective action steps I can take now. And so, like I said, when I realized that my wrist was fractured, I actually staved off the true internalization and processing of that until it was healed. Because I knew from my own experience, my smartest move is to arm myself with strength and positivity and to empower myself with the knowledge that I'm healing this quickly. So I put it off until the end, and I do think it's a very important part of the healing journey to acknowledge and integrate, yeah, that was scary. Like, yeah, that sucked. Yeah, that hurts. But it's also understanding when is the right time for me to allow myself to really take in, you know, the stress, the horrors, the terror, the pain that I've gone through. And in my experience, I feel like it's more helpful to kind of wait until I'm out of the weeds to really allow myself to have that part of the process. Now, it might be different for you and for other people. So I in no way mean to project my personal strategy onto anyone else. But what I will say is that that fear and that kind of like sadness that comes along with recognizing like the hard time that parts of my body are having can generate the type of internal environment that is not necessarily conducive to swift, optimal, accelerated healing. So I have learned to nurture the parts of me that are afraid in the meantime, like, sweetheart, I know this is hard for you, and I know that you've got it, and you're a badass, and you're doing a great job, and I know that you're bummed that you're not playing racquetball, and I know that you're sad that you can't even really comb your hair right now, and it's okay, like, you'll get through this. Like, we always want to be nurturing and acknowledging and being with the parts of us that are freaked out during the healing journey, after the healing journey, and 24/7 when we're not even healing anything, right? But I find that the fear and the kind of tendency towards self-pity that can be attached through the coding into these, attached to these diagnoses and pathologies, they're just not optimal for healing the body, right? That's why for myself, I've learned to compartmentalize a little bit until I'm on the other side. And then for me, it's more helpful to fully go in to the psycho-emotional pieces. But regardless, the shift that I'm inviting is to recognize that when we receive a pathology or a diagnosis, it's not like a rock bottom. And I see this so often where people are dealing with health imbalances, with pain, with symptoms that aren't comfortable. And when they get the diagnosis, they go way down and they don't realize that, like, no, this is the end of your suffering. Like, you've already been in pain. You've already been dealing with brain fog. You already couldn't keep any weight on. You've already had these weird rashes. Like, you've already done that. You've already been through that. This diagnosis marks the conclusion of that phase of your life and the beginning of a new phase wherein now you're resourced to put it all behind you and to heal. So it's like, if we had a graph and there was like peak sickness, I would say getting the diagnosis is peak sickness. And then it's downhill from there in terms of like the ease of, well, now we can heal it and come out of this. So it's like an attitude adjustment of recognizing, okay, I just got this diagnosis. I recognize the urge to interpret this as something to be scared or freaked out about. And instead of going there, I'm gonna utilize this as empowerment fodder. I'm going to utilize this as a recognition of how much more resource I am now that I have this to take steps towards healing than I was before I received the diagnosis. So instead of receiving them as bad news, using it to mark an ending of the discomfort and the imbalances and the beginning of the healing process. So similarly to the way that like I congratulate people when they get fired or they announce that they're getting divorced, it's like, great, something new is available for you. You know, congrats to your courage to putting an end to what wasn't working and availing yourself to something new. Same attitude adjustment around the pathology. Now, I had a parallel experience to this in my Know Thyself Salon group coaching community, because for the past 2 weeks, we've been going through our quarterly life assessments. And the life assessments invite us to rate various categories of our lives with a red, yellow, green scaling. With red, yellow, green color coding system. The words are, they're like nearby, but I think that some of the words are still needing to rest and recover from whatever was moving through my body yesterday. And that's okay. That's okay. So the various categories of life assessment include emotional well-being, physical health, our home, our relationship to our finances, our mission, our romantic relationships, self-care. You know, they're like 25 different categories. And so, you know, we have been together as a community for years now. And so we've gotten used to checking in with ourselves like this. And for me, it's been a total game changer to have actual receipts where I see, oh, like a couple of years ago, my home was in the red because I rent a furnished casita. I didn't really like the furniture. It didn't really feel like my vibe or my style. And it just like wasn't aesthetically appealing or really all that comfortable. And because I saw, I had the receipts like, oh, I'm red. And part of what we do when we're working through our life assessments is we create strategies to move ourselves towards green, and we reverse engineer ourselves from the timeline that is green, right? Assuming, okay, I'm already living in a house where when I rate myself, I'm green, what changed? What is different? And then reverse engineering. And so the beauty of this rating system is to see like clearly, oh, okay, this area of my life is needing an upgrade. And because I saw that, I ended up getting a beautiful, comfy chair to read in, which is such a lifestyle upgrade. And making a lot of changes in terms of organizing and putting up pictures and beautiful rugs and like really putting some effort. So I know that I'm not alone in finding benefit from these life assessments. So we're going through them this week, and there's a woman who's more new to the community, and she was really bummed about the places where she had rated herself as red. And I saw her internalizing it and kind of allowing it to bring her energy down. And so I was coaching her in the same way that I, you know, I'm talking to us around the pathologies of like, no, it's a great thing. Like now that you have the information that you're red, now you know what needs help, like what needs upgrading. And you even have already pinpointed the steps necessary to do it. So you're already moving towards yellow. And so I think some of us can get really bummed when we take honest stock of our lives, be it our physical health, the state of our relationships, the state of our finances, whatever, and get bummed out when we see that things are in disarray. But what I'm proposing is that I think it's a moment to celebrate when we recognize that something is in disarray, because now we're being honest and authentic with here's where I really am. And this is the beauty of the diagnosis and the pathologies, as well as like the life assessment, is like we're taking the time to really look at the state of these certain things and get a realistic assessment perspective on where we're at. And so, no, I'm still not a fan of pathologies or diagnoses, but given that my friend was dealing with some unknown, you know, health imbalance for a while, in her case, it was really helpful to get a diagnosis. But again, resisting the urge to attach or identify or stay there, and just using it as like, okay, this is what I'm dealing with. These are the changes that my body is inviting me to make, which are detox the heavy metals, you know, and all the various ways that we can do that, which are many. So similar with the life assessment, it's like, just getting real with where we're at, you know, it's what I've been doing with my business for the past year and a half of recognizing here's where I want to be with my business and here's where I actually am. So for me to get from where I am now to where I want to be requires all of these steps, redoing my website, creating these pitch decks, creating these one sheets, creating these consulting packages, right? It's all this back end work that I wouldn't have done if I didn't take honest stock with where I am at. So I guess the shift is to not let these things get us down, right? Just look at them as neutral information. Like, oh, great, this is neutral information. I'm not really happy with the state of my casita. Oh, this is neutral information. According to the blood tests, I am dealing with levels of heavy metal toxicity that aren't healthy for my body. Great, now I know what I need to switch, right? It's like I was going through this when I had the mystery rash on my mouth for a year and a half. You could definitely tune into my podcast around 22, 23. God, was it 2 years? Where I had no idea what was going on. And I was just throwing every noodle I could at my face and trying all this topical stuff. And like nothing was really working. And then when I finally figured out, oh, wait, this is from parasites, it wasn't like a bummer that I found out I had parasites. It was like, great, now I know what I need to do to help restore balance to my body. This is wonderful. So again, nothing to cling to or identify with or carry around, I have parasites. No, it's not that. I'm in the process of ridding my body of parasites. And how great that we have these diagnostics, you know, be they the medical variety or the life assessments that we're going through in my Know Thyself Salon group coaching community, to support us in recognizing where we're at and to know what steps to take to get to where we want to go. You know, Guru Singh, one of my favorite living teachers, he has this analogy of like, say I want to go to Portland because I want to be abused by confused people with blue hair and mismatched tattoos who, whatever the Portland culture is, which has made it like a really unpleasant place to visit for the past few years. But regardless, let's pretend that I want to drive to Portland. I'm not going to be able to know how to get to Portland unless I plug in where I am now in Santa Fe, New Mexico. But if the map app or Thomas Guide or like whatever I'm looking at, if I don't have a starting place, this is where I actually am, then I'm not going to be able to determine what steps I need to take to get to where I want to go. So I think the key here is also just to relinquish judgment, as well as that, you know, any tendencies towards fear or panic, and to just take this as neutral information. And I hear myself saying that at the same time, if there is fear, if there is freak out, like we can deal with it authentically, right? Like going into the parts that are freaked out and, you know, having those conversations with them to keep them at bay. But more so what I'm speaking to is the panic that I very often see emerging on the flip side of receiving these pathologies and diagnoses, instead of just taking them as useful information that's allowing us to upgrade and also marking the end of the lack of clarity, the end of the discomfort and the pain and the suffering that was coming from the symptoms, because now we know what they are, and now we are resourced to transmute them. I hope that made sense. I was excited to talk about this piece, and I think in my head, when I was thinking about recording the podcast, it probably went a little more smoothly than it just went. And this kind of brings me to the next piece, which I can't speak to with any authority, but it's Saturn moving into Aries. I'm not an astrologer, and I haven't even looked into like, what are the specifics about Saturn in Aries? And like, what do I need to look for as someone with four planets in Aries in the first house, which doesn't necessarily make me the most popular people in certain circles. We'll get to that in a second, but Saturn in Aries. Without having looked into it, but just from my own personal experience this past 3-4 weeks, here's how I'm experiencing it, where I will take bold action in putting something out into the world, and then various things go incredibly awry with this thing, and then there's all this extra time and effort that's going into cleaning up all the things that went awry. And nothing's like full-on disaster, because the one thing that I'll say about having these opportunities for cleanup is realizing how gracious and compassionate people are. And when I say people, I'm definitely talking about our tribe and like how cool everyone's been around me straightening out the kerfuffles. But just noticing these days, the things that I have put out, be it like my language of healing webinar and five people not getting the link in time for the call because of an automation kerfuffle, or because of, the group coaching call that I hosted earlier this week, where there was a disruption that required calls to everyone on the call afterwards to acknowledge and apologize and get their feedback. So it just keeps happening consistently. I'd love to know from any astrology nerds out there if this lines up with Saturn moving into Aries. I mean, I know Saturn is the taskmaster, is the lord of time. You know what? I'm not going to pretend that I know what this is about, but I'm just observing this happening in my world and thinking, I wonder if this is Saturn moving into Aries, that everything is just requiring extra cleanup time on the back end or on the flip side of executing. How's it going for you guys? So I've been thinking about, how can I put this? So, I mentioned four planets in Aries in the first house, which definitely lends itself to a certain type of like aggression, confrontational nature, a leap before looking type thing. And look, I don't believe in victimizing myself to my astrology. My soul chose this. And so, it's my task in this lifetime to master the art of patience, to master the art of diplomacy, to master the art of kind, compassionate communication, all of those things. But here's something I've noticed, and especially in the like new age spiritual community, is there's like a hierarchy of shadows, and there's a hierarchy of tolerance for shadows that I notice definitely favors repressive expressions over reactive expressions. And so I'm going to refer right now to the Gene Keys. As you guys know, I'm super into the Gene Keys. I've been into the Gene Keys since about 2010. I've attended a bajillion Gene Keys retreats and courses. I am an official Gene Keys guide. And right now, I am taking a little bit of a hiatus from rolling with the Gene Keys community because it just hasn't felt super aligned for me in terms of just like a basic kowtowing to the victimhood frequency and kind of a leaning into micromanaging what is shared and what is communicated so that people's unhealed trauma isn't being triggered. And to me, it just doesn't feel that aligned with how I interpret the work. That being said, I, of course, am still working with the keys themselves. I, of course, am still doing Gene Keys readings. Speaking of, if you are interested in a hologenetic profile reading, I love doing those. They're so fun to go through. Definitely hit me up through email or through Instagram. I think there's a link on my Instagram link tree where you could just sign up for a reading. But my point is, in the Gene Keys system, there are 64 keys that are held in the 64 DNA codons. So basically, the Gene Keys is, people are like, what's the Gene Keys? And it's like the most dense, it's like, how do we answer that? So on one level, it's a book. It started out as a book, super simply. It's also a living transmission that delineates each of the 64 DNA codons as pathways to enlightenment. So we can think of it as there are 64 pathways to enlightenment, and each of those pathways can be found through the 64 codons. Now, there are 64 gene keys, and each one has a shadow frequency, a gift frequency, and a Siddic frequency. So the shadow frequency is obviously the lowest frequency of each key. And when we move into higher frequencies of the key, we're now in the gift frequency, right? So my chart is right here above. So very simply, the 27th gene key moves from the shadow of selfishness into the gift of altruism. And then from there, we move into the more enlightened frequencies of selflessness. Now, I'm going to stave off the urge to go into the inefficacy of the ness on the end of selfish and how we're still invoking the selfish selflessness. There's so many double negatives in there, selflessness. Okay, we're going to stave that off. That's not the point. The point is just that within the system of the gene keys, there are 64 shadows, right? And our task as awakening, evolving, reality-creating beings is to transmute the shadows into the gifts, to be operating in those higher frequencies of all of our keys. But the beauty of the gene keys, at least for me, is recognizing that we all carry shadows. And for me, I think earlier on in my transformational path, which started for me when I was in college, was that I had a lot of shame and embarrassment around the shadows that I was expressing and the ways that I was expressing those shadows. And at the time, I was operating with some distorted thought forms that had me thinking that, like, I was the only one who had these shadows and that all other humans were, like, better and less broken than I was and weren't dealing with shadows. And it was through, like, years and years and years of walking the transformational path that I came to understand, no, everyone has shadows. And that's really one of the things that I love the most about the gene keys is recognizing we all carry all of this coding. Every single one of us has shadows, and no shadows are better or worse or grosser or more mortifying than any others. So for me, it was very equalizing, and it helped me to, just like I was saying, in terms of receiving a diagnosis or a pathology and not beating the shit out of myself for it, like, that's what happened with the gene keys, was like it resourced me to look my shadows, cancel clearly. It resourced me to look the shadows that move through me, to look them in the eyes directly without shame or embarrassment or judgment, and just get really honest with, like, these are some of the shadows I'm dealing with. Specifically, like, the 51st shadow was very, very hard for me to read. The 51st gene key moves from agitation to initiative to awakening, right? So that key, which for me sits in the sphere of my emotional intelligence and happens to be modified with a 2-line, so if you know anything about the gene keys, every key, and I don't want to get us too far down the rabbit hole, but every key is modified by a line, either 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. And those lines do correspond to the I Ching lines. I Ching is very much related to the gene keys. But the 2-line that sits in the EQ sphere, it relates to rage. So I already had a kind of volcanic, explosive, shocking, like emotionally volatile key sitting in my emotional intelligence. And then that was modified by a line that was corresponds with rage. So when I first started to read the 51st gene key, and we, you know, every gene key in the book starts off with the shadow, I couldn't even read it. It was too on the nose and too mortifying and too horrifying. And I had so much self-judgment that it took me a while to even get through the key. But through my time in the Gene Keys community and through my work with the keys themselves, I was able to have compassion for myself, to relinquish the judgment and the shame, and to just recognize we all have shadows. And it's not for me to judge that, like, my shadows are worse than anyone else's. That would be egoic anyway. It's just, okay, this is a shadow we're dealing with. This is how it expresses. This is the damage that it has done in my life and in the world. And this is how I transmute it into the higher gift frequencies, right? Like, it doesn't have to be more, like, tragic and dramatic than that. But what I've noticed is that there seems to be a favoring. I've noticed this in the Gene Keys community, I've noticed this in the spiritual communities, and I've noticed this in the New Age communities, and I've noticed this pretty much everywhere for the repressive expression of the shadows versus the reactive. So I just randomly now just turned to Gene Key 16, right? Like I said, it was totally random. So Gene Key 16 moves from the shadow of indifference to the gift of versatility to the city of mastery. Okay, so every shadow of the Gene Keys has a repressive expression and a reactive expression. All of them. Every one of the 64 Gene Keys, every one of the 64 shadows has a repressive expression and a reactive expression. Now, my cosmic blueprint, the way that I'm wired, makes it so that I have had a tendency towards more reactive expressions versus repressive expressions. But I'm just going to give you an example. You know what? Instead of doing this 16th, let's do the 51st since I already referenced it, and we can just get a little bit more. You know what? I'm going to pause for a moment. Okay, I'm doing a little bit of back-end coordinating, but what I was saying was, let's use the 51st Gene Key as our example because it's something I could speak to with a lot of experience. Speaking of, people ask, do I write in my books? I don't know if you can see this. Like, I write all over my books. I take so many notes. And I encourage you to write in my books if you're a fan of reading them. All right, so the 51st Gene Key, the repressive nature is cowardly, whereas the reactive nature is hostile. Repressive, okay, lots of life happening over here on the home front. So yay for the pause button. And as I was saying, the 51st Gene Key, the shadow of agitation, the repressive nature will express it as cowardly, whereas the reactive nature will express as hostile. So I'm just going to read you briefly from the Gene Key's book, The 51st Gene Key. Repressive nature, when refracted through an introverted nature, the 51st shadow manifests as a kind of cowardice. These are people who steadily lose hope concerning life, and instead of lashing out like the reactive nature, slowly shut down and turn inward. These can be highly depressive people with little or no enthusiasm for anything in life. The cowardice here lies in the repression of a very powerful nature. These people simply allow fear to rule their lives, even though they have the power within them to pull themselves out. The real fear is of facing the fear itself. Ironically, by facing the fear, it is shown to be an illusion. However, such natures rarely find the individual courage to break the illusion, preferring instead to wallow in a repetitive cycle of self-pity. To break out of this cycle of depression, these people have to wake up to the fact that only they can rescue themselves. And I am thinking of a couple people who would be wise to read the Gene Keys and to move into the higher levels of initiative when it comes to the 51st Gene Key. And all in divine timing. We're all walking our own paths in the way that is appropriate for us, in terms of what level of consciousness we're at and what our soul came here to accomplish. So that was the repressive nature. The reactive nature of the 51st shadow of agitation is hostile. The extroverted version of this shadow manifests as hostility. The hostility is the result of the dangerous pairing of a fearless rage and a deep sense of futility. These natures bring outer shock into the world, obviously in varying degrees. At an emotional level, these people have no real sense of respect for human beings. So I want to pause right there. And this is just something that I've actually mentioned this to Richard before. And I even did a short workshop for the Gene Keys guides on helpful languaging around the Gene Keys. So this is something that I feel is really wise for us to steer clear of. at an emotional level, these people. So notice how in languaging it that way, Richard is creating an identification between those of us who carry the 51st gene key, or those of us who might not even carry the 51st gene key in our whole genetic profile, but feel a strong affiliation or connection to this gene key and are still in the process of working with this key and transmuting it into the higher frequencies. So personally, in my experience with the gene keys, I find it's really not helpful to identify with any of the keys or the shadows or the gifts or the lines or any of those things. So to this end, I don't think it's helpful to say at an emotional level, these people have no real sense of respect for human beings. I would say, you know, people who are animated by the 51st shadow. But even then, it's like people who are at a stage of their development wherein they're allowing the shadow of the 51st gene key to run them. Granted, it's way more words, but that's always helpful in terms of like stacking words between ourselves and the thing that there's a tendency to identify with, right? Creating more space. I mean, you can even see the preferential treatment in the way that Richard writes about the repressive nature versus writing about the reactive nature. Like for me, and look, it is definitely possible that because I carry this key and because this is a key that I have tussled with, right, and had misgivings and ambivalence about in the past, I could be conflating my own, I could be projecting my own feelings about it, but when I read it, to me, it feels like there's a bent. It feels like there's a little bit more of a judgment on the hostile, reactive nature. Definitely correct me if I'm wrong. So at an emotional level, these people have no real sense of respect for human beings. They tend to be drawn to any sphere of society where competition is worshipped, from business to sports. They're generally loners with deep-seated emotional boundaries. Even right there, they're generally loners, right? Like when I'm looking in the repressive nature, I don't see the name calling. These can be highly depressive people. I mean, depressive is an adjective, it's a descriptive. I guess that's part of it. But they are generally loners versus they tend to keep to themselves. It's like, I feel this around a lot of the reactive shadow descriptions. There is a judgment. Let me continue. They're generally loners with deep-seated emotional boundaries. They often throw themselves into highly dangerous or risky situations where they may even face death. With the reactive nature, this profound sense of agitation that underlies the 51st gene key projects itself onto others. Thus, these people also provoke hostility in others, but without any real agenda. They simply do it because they cannot help themselves and do not care. The only way for such a pattern to be broken is for these people to channel their agitation into some creative project that will ultimately lead to a feeling of fulfillment. So, that does it for the first half of today's podcast. Is you are inspired to tune into the second half, which I highly, highly recommend because I get into some juicy, titillating territory. You can find that over on both my Locals and my Patreon communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats. At both of my membership communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus bonus content, plus you get that like confidence and that like warm, sparkly feeling that comes from supporting other people, AKA me, in doing what they love to do, in creating wonderfulness for the world, in talking into a tiny light on top of a glowing screen for 2 hours at a time, and continuing to do what she can to share high vibing content with you and me and all of us. So Patreon, Locals, whichever feels best for you. Thank you for supporting me there. I do also receive one-time donations. So if that's feeling more aligned for you, please click through the link in the show description. Also reminding you, Wildcraft Herbs, the best herbal grooming, face, body health products on the market. They're making tinctures now. I hear they're moving into like Shilajit and maybe even methylene blue. Honestly, for all of your high vibe wellness and body care stuff, Wildcraft Herbs is my go-to spot. Hopefully it'll be your go-to spot as well. Last call to sign up for my newsletter at DannyKatz.com. And that does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are Omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon tribe. Have a rockin' day.